Hello and welcome to Movie Phone. Did you know I was at a thing?
Good morning, Vietnam.
Yeah, neither of these is our tagline. But I was at an event last night, the Startup to Startup event. And the CEO of Turnpath was speaking, and it turns out he was one of the early movie phone guys. You remember that thing? You dial up an 800 number, 888 movie phone or whatever the heck it was, and it would give you the times that the movies were playing. That was awesome when there was no internet and completely meaningless thereafter.
I wonder what their business model was.
Well, they sold tickets eventually. And then they, you know, so it was like early Fandango. Oh, no, that's not what their business model was. Their business model was they played an ad for a movie.
Yeah.
That was their business model. Eventually, they sold tickets.
Mid-roll,
but it was pre-roll,
post-roll.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's
tonight
what it was.
In the theater, we have Jaws and...
Right, it would say, brought to you by... And then, if you're afraid to go in the water, Jaws 3! Jaws 3, and then, you know, they made a bunch of money on that. I remember that.
So probably not a great venture bet.
Could
have been a good business.
What about Fandango? Like, you know, turns out that's a big business, and who would have guessed?
I use Fandango every single time I go to the movies, and I don't care that I pay him a couple of extra bucks to do it. When I leave my house, I have my tickets in my hand.
You know you'll get in the movie,
I don't have to wait
and
in
you
line.
You don't wait in line. You walk up to the front of the thing. You just beep. The only time I'm annoyed is when their little scanners are down, and you have to get the ticket from the line. I'm like, give me my buck back. I paid for convenience, not for like a guaranteed ticket. When you have tickets that have seats associated with them, like in Europe. Wouldn't you spend $20 on a movie?
When I was a boy and I lived in Japan,
yeah.
I went to a movie theater once when I was in 1989 in Japan. And the thing that I found most shocking was they didn't understand fire safety. And it was some new Western hit. I don't remember what the movie was. But you go in and you get your seat, and then more and more and more and more people come in until eventually it's standing room only. Like, in the aisles next to you,
oh,
there was people
God.
Standing, and the doors opened in.
Ugh.
So had there been a fire or an earthquake or a panic, it would have been one of those crushing deaths. I'm sure they changed the law since then. But I remember sitting there going, this isn't like the movies at home.
See, and I was thinking you were going the other way, because this is in 1990, 91, and I was studying Europe, and I went to visit a friend of mine, Steve Boom, the wonderful Steve Boom, formerly of Yahoo.
Now CEO of MiG-33.
I went to see Mr. Boom. He was studying in Paris, and we went to a movie on the Champs-Élysées, and they had these huge seats, and it was like the most comfortable, beautiful theaters, and you could buy your particular seats. And the only problem I had with that theater is that they let dogs in. People brought their freaking little dogs to the movie theater. That made me crazy.
So it became like a smellorama.
Yeah, I was just down in. I drove down to Pasadena, first we went to Santa Barbara, and then we went to Pasadena. And in both hotels that we were in, there were dogs. They were dog hotels.
So dogs don't work in the movie theater. But my dog is trained to bark when somebody rings the doorbell.
Oh, that'd be.
So now we're watching the TV, and somebody rings the doorbell on TV, and the dog goes wacko crazy. This is a big German Shepherd. Can you imagine in the movie theater, and there's the doorbell rings, and like.
That'd be very bad.
The French. They'll allow your dogs, but not your kids, into some restaurants.
Yeah, exactly. Great.
We can go on like this all day.
So, welcome to VentureCast. I'm David Hornick of August Capital.
And this is Howard Hartenbaum of August Capital.
I mean, if you're listening to this, you probably know we're David Hornick and Howard Hartenbaum, and you probably know that we're of August Capital.
But we say August Capital a few times.
As many times as possible. Exactly. If this were a movie, we'd be walking back and forth in front of the entranceway with August Capital sign.
Yep. But brought to you by August Capital.
Exactly. The finest purveyors of venture money. Do you need funding? Come to us here at August Capital. You know, despite the appearance, the excellent appearance that I'm a brilliant marketer with this fine VentureCast, this widespread, often listened to VentureCast, they just came out with the latest rankings of the top venture capital blogs.
Yeah, and to be in the top, you have to blog.
Yeah. Well, shut up, Howard. Although that's sort of the message. That was the message.
You were top. Like 3 or 2 or 5 or something for a long time, and now you're not even on the list.
No, it depends on how long the list is. I went from Larry's first list was 3. I was number 3, And then I was number 5. And then this one I was, do you have any idea? Would you like to guess?
11.
28.
Wow.
I hadn't blogged in 2 months.
Wow. Yeah, but it's, if you blog once, you'll move back to like number 3.
I don't know. We'll find out, because I've made a commitment to like, okay, look, that's unacceptable. You know what? I've been blogging now for 8 years. Like, the idea that I'd just fall off a cliff like that is brutal. It was an ego thing completely, but it was brutal to look and say I'm 28th, you know, on the list. So I wrote a big blog post about how it sucks to be number 28. And then and that was earlier in this week. And then I just wrote a blog post last night about this Procter & Gamble event I went to. That's 2 blog posts in a week. People are going to get tired of that.
You're going to ask me to guest blog again?
Yeah. Have you ever written anything for Venture Blog?
No.
I used to say, why don't you do that?
I gave you some good ideas.
Yeah, you gave me ridiculous, controversial ideas I could never write about.
That's,
do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that.
Do you think I could write about the things you proposed?
Can I write about them if I'm a guest?
No. You're supposed to be attracting people, not scaring them.
Yeah. Well, we all have our own techniques.
But we'll see. I mean, it's sort of fun to be back to blogging. And actually, it was interesting. I went to this, so Procter & Gamble had this innovation summit of sorts on out here, where they got together a bunch of the investors it seemed to be not in a particular technology. It was sort of across the bar to talk about how Procter & Gamble is using technology, etc. And I remember sort of sitting there. I remember, because it was so far ago yesterday. But I was sitting there and I thought, oh, this would be an interesting blog post. And it's been a while since I did that, right? Been a while since I said, okay, I got to take notes on this because this would be a good blog post. So I'm going to get back in that mode, Howard. Back in journalistic mode. How do you like them apples?
I had a job interview for Procter & Gamble in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yeah.
And it was for a very nice gentleman named Michael Tafuri, who was the inventor of the Pringles.
Awesome.
And then Pringle has a P&G in it. That's part of its name. Ever noticed that? And he was running the paper products division. He was a paper guy, and it was actually paper slurry technology that came up with the idea to make the Pringles. They kind of made the chips in a similar way
they make
how you
squish
mix a slurry and squish it, and it was kind of a neat thing. But the thing I remember the most about it is I went to Procter & Gamble, and, well, one is they made me take a test.
Yeah.
Like an aptitude test, which I was young, you know, like 25 years old, and it was kind of weird to take an aptitude test. And then I had to use the restroom. And I go to the restroom, and in the bathroom, there was like 5 different rolls of toilet paper. And each one had the name of like what brand it was that was made by Procter & Gamble. And they wanted their employees
to vote with their butts.
To basically try them so that they would know the products. And I'm thinking, that's kind of weird. Like, anyway. So then I go and I wash my hands and I look at the wall, and there's 5 different types of paper towels hanging on the wall.
So
like Bounty and Bounty Plus. No, is this the paper?
Just the paper?
Is this the paper products
division?
Oh,
you were in the paper division. Oh, right.
And that's what I remember of Procter & Gamble. Like, that they... I never thought of it as vote with your butt and vote with your hand. But I just thought it's great when companies have their customers actually use their products.
Totally.
Like, if you have to go to the bathroom, you have to use our paper towels to dry your hands.
That's how it should be. What would we have in an aptitude test to be a venture capitalist? Like, if we were to have, we're going to hire an August Capital associate, and so here's the aptitude test. What would you test?
Would be to determine if they have attention deficit disorder, and if they do, they pass.
Perfect. Yeah, that's step one, right? If they're as ADD as we are, if they can't stop spinning in their chair, then we'll actually potentially hire them.
Good.
Because
okay.
The two of us are like, you know, tapping our feet. And
ADD positive, check.
Maybe we'd like make them go sell someone on an idea. Like, I don't know what. Or
I think a variety in background is interesting. Like, you know.
Yeah, so they'd have to come up with all sorts of interesting, random thoughts about, you know, none of this straight as an arrow. Oh, this is the path.
I had another test for a job when I was younger. It was for to be a grocery bagger at Safeway. And I went there in high school, and I needed a job because, like, I was in high school, and my parents gave me, like, $3 a week or whatever it was. And I needed gas money. And they were like, okay, well, you could be, like, in the bagging program, And then they gave me a test that was like for four-year-olds. It was a box which had different shapes, and then they gave me these plastic things that had to fit into the shapes. And they were checking, like, if you knew that a star went into a star holder and a
You're
circle.
You're kidding me.
And they did this test, and they timed it, and if you couldn't do the test within 10 seconds, you could not go on.
You couldn't be a bagger.
The bagger.
That seems fair. I assume you'd passed.
And
the bagging test.
Well, yeah. And they said, I said, well, what's with the test? And they said, well, because we get some people, and then first they put in the eggs, and then they drop the cans on top of them, and they can't understand the difference between eggs and cans.
Well.
Anyway. Venture capital test. ADD.
VC test. Yeah, you'd have to deal with people. You'd have to, like, solve a crisis. You'd have to understand a cap table.
You say to them, how many mobile devices do you currently have on your person?
Yeah, all right. Show us now.
And they have, like, if they can't whip out at least three different platforms,
they're out.
They're out.
Exactly. Although I have to admit this, I have the Nexus One. Got the Nexus One, courtesy of our friends at Google, and I appreciate that. Carrying three phones is a real pain. I mean, maybe
I'll
have to carry.
You only have two front pockets.
So what? Am I going to carry one in my back pocket? I don't think I'll break it.
One of those little
dongle or whatever, Remineck. No. And it was, so I had my iPhone and the Nexus One in one pocket and the Trio in the other, and it was just ridiculous. I guess I need one of those tool belts.
No, one kind of the space belt where you have, like, the things all around the front.
Isn't that who? There's a VC who has one of those. Darn, I'm not remembering who it is. Who literally has, like, you know, utility belt of devices.
So it took a European to explain to me why Americans put their stuff on their belts. Like, I was talking with him, and I'm like, he's always like, we figured out what it is with you Americans and your holsters. And then he grabbed his hand and he made like he was drawing his gut. He goes,
that's what he thought it was?
It's like Americans have to have, it's like the Wild West. You have to have a holster. There you have it. But now we're all copying the Europeans and we're putting them in our pockets.
I do. But then someone was explaining to me that actually there may be some suggestion that I'm going to get testicular cancer from having so much radiation sitting next to my penis.
Don't you know the difference between a penis and testicles?
Why is it I knew that was coming back at me?
I don't want to disappoint you.
I'm just describing proximity. I wasn't saying I was going to get penile cancer. Can you even get cancer of the penis? You never hear about penis cancer. You always hear
about testicular
cancer.
That's because everybody's too embarrassed to talk about it.
Well, why are people talking about testicular cancer?
Well, let's get out of this. Because I can really get into this.
So, Howard, I'm looking at your iPhone, and it has some little taggy thing on the back. What's up with that?
Yeah, so I met this nice young entrepreneur who was formerly at Skype, and he started a company called TigerTag. And TigerTag gives you these little, well, they make you pay for them, but they're basically their cost and shipping. So you get a sheet of them for $1.99 or something like that. And there's these little stickers, and each one has a code on it, and you put the sticker on one of your devices that you could easily lose, like a cell phone or a laptop or whatever, your pen.
Your child.
And the sticker sticks real nice, and then you go online to TigerTag's website, and you type in the code, and then you go through a little, you know, menu to pick out what item it is. It's a Canon ICSI 401 camera, and you basically register all your stuff. A lot of companies have tried to get people to register all the stuff that they own, and in this case, it's the basis of getting it returned to you if you lose it. And on the sticker, it says TigerTag, and it has this little code that's individual to each device, and then it says return for reward, TigerTag.com. And they've done some testing where they take 10 cell phones and they give them to some blogger and they say, put a tag on each one, they say, go spread these around the city and let's see what happens. And about 8 of them come back through the TigerTag mechanism, you know.
Nice.
So it's kind of a neat thing. They're building an app now for the iPhone so that when you hit the button and turn the power on, it will say on the picture whose it is, TigerTag return for reward or whatever. So kind of a neat thing. And
so I have this keychain, right? It's like these keychains. My Stanford Alumni Association keychain says on the back of it, deposit in any mailbox, Stanford Alumni Association, then it has an, you know, whatever, and then it has my member number. It's the same kind of thing, only there's no reason to do this except for the fact that there's no utility in having my keys. So maybe go, all right, fine, I'll throw those in a mailbox. But that was
if they find your the wallet, they keep it. But if it's your keys, they put it in a mailbox because they feel good about it.
Yeah, exactly. But if they find a laptop, then there better be a reward. Otherwise, forget about it.
Yeah.
So what is a reward?
So then it becomes a negotiated reward with
really with it's not, the person. Not like some
no
set.
It's not a, so they've done it where it's still a young company, so they don't have a lot of use cases yet, but they've done it where you get into a lottery for a big reward, or it's different. They're working on it, but the thing I think is neat about the company is, so I got this sheet of stickers and I put one on my phone and I put one on my daughter's Nexus One phone and I put one on my wife's digital camera and one on my wife's Nokia, she got the new N97 Mini.
you could pass the VC test with all these devices.
And you know, we put them on the digital cameras, we put them on the Game Boys, we put them on everything. And then I'm looking at this database when I'm logged in, and TigerTag now knows that I have these 11 devices. It knows when I, you know, roughly how old they are based on what model they are. They know what I'm, you know, likely to buy in the future. And I
they
think
know where they, you live because it's there's got to be a return address,
yeah.
Right?
And yeah, you put in all your stuff, and so I think it's the data that's actually really interesting here. And I think if they figure out how to give, like their next step is they're going to give out these stickers for free. There won't be any $1.99 because there's a bunch of companies that approach them and want them to stuff advertisements in their envelopes with it, and the advertisements will cover the cost. And so their service is really, I think, it's all about the data.
Yeah, there are lots of. I mean, well, first of all, data is unbelievably valuable. We saw this in Tickle, right? I mean, one of the things about Tickle was we funded this company. Those of you who don't know what Tickle is, we funded this company, and it was quizzes, right? And it started out with things like, "What breed of dog are you?" or "Who's your celebrity match?" And it's so you'd take this 20
Angelina
question.
Jolie.
Oh, is it nice? Or are you just guessing? You're just.
And I'm a German Shepherd.
Go take the test. I'm a Bichon Frise. So sad, embarrassing. Anyway, those aren't true. We haven't taken the test recently. We should take them again. So you take the test. You'd answer 20 questions, but they were all sorts of questions, right? I mean, you know, you could ask people practically anything, and they'd answer. Which car are you most like? Or what car would you most like to drive? Or if you're alone on a Friday night, which thing would you like to do the most? Or what? I mean, just didn't matter. You could ask them anything, and they would answer these questions. And in the end, I think that Tickle had more north of a billion answers, and the data was, you know, was wildly valuable to marketers, etc. So these data businesses are pretty interesting.
Yeah, in Tickle's case, their business was that they would show you part of your profile. And then you'd pay money to get the rest of your profile,
mm-hmm.
which was a very... And they were bought by Monster. And then Bill Draper calls it the Tickle Monster.
That was the
so
outcome.
So John and I met a woman earlier this week.
John would be our partner, John Johnston.
We met an entrepreneur who was pitching, and she said, you know, James Currier. And she said, and John goes, yeah, you know, we invested in Tickle. She goes, he and I wrote the business plan. I was the co-founder of Tickle, but didn't follow through with it.
Wow.
It was kind of there fun, you know, everything comes around eventually.
Exactly. Here I thought Rick Marini was the man.
Well, this
rock star, and you know, he showed up after the scene. Yeah. I don't believe that. I'm still with you, Rick Marini. And you hung in there. Rick and Stan and
yeah, you guys James. Made money from it, and she decided it wasn't the right thing for her. And
all right, hope her next thing's interesting, so you know. James, you should go help her write that business plan and claim a piece of it. Quickly. But there are a bunch of these businesses. So we spent a bunch of time with our friend Peter Pham over at Bill Shrink, and that one's a data-driven business, right? I mean, ultimately, what kind of cell phone plan is good for you? What kind of credit card? They get a bunch of granular information about you in order to make that determination, and I have to assume that data is really valuable to someone.
Yeah, the value proposition for coming in for Bill Shrink is as simple as you tell us what cell phone plan you're using, and we'll look at your usage, your profile, where you live, what the coverage is, and what other plans are available out there, how long you've had the plan, what the switching, you know, penalty is for doing it, and we might be able to propose to you, oh, if you switch from AT&T, family and friends, blah, 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 you can now go to the T-Mobile, you know, friends and family, and you'll save over the next 2 years $762.12. Or
exactly.
Whatever. And it's fantastic way of weeding through all of the complexity of the system. But in the meantime, they also do it for credit cards based on credit card rates and credit card fees and point programs that they have. They're doing it for where you should be buying your gasoline, opportunities for all sorts of insurance, what type of car insurance you have. They learn more and more and more about those people who are engaged with the service. And there's companies out there who are saying, oh, we've got a person who lives here. They have a really expensive cell phone plan. They have three people on their plan, so we know they're a family. And maybe we should offer them car insurance. And the marketing benefit to the company is the data.
Yeah.
The data. It's the data.
Well, look at Mint. Holy cow.
That's all data.
How much data is sitting there, right? There's just a ton of data. But, you know, I have to think that if that's the case, that if data is king, in the land where data is king, Facebook is king. Think how much data they have about... Now, I know you're not a huge... You're not a huge Facebook user, are you?
I have 472 friends. Most of them I've never met. Actually, I actually know everybody on my Facebook friend list. I have people I don't recognize their names, I don't friend.
No, because that doesn't make any sense.
To answer your question, I don't use it a lot. I do use it on occasion. I think it's interesting. I'm amazed at the amount of complexity that goes into it. But I have to believe that they have so much data, it's impossible for them to really pull the valuable stuff out.
No. Of course it's not impossible. Well, then they should be using Splunk.
Well,
that's
Splunk
the answer. Right? Because then you can pull, can you sift through all the data and incredibly simply and anyway... I think that, so it's interesting, when I was at this Procter & Gamble thing, one of their social media guys was talking about their strategy with respect to advertising, etc., and they are huge believers in Facebook. Just, you know, they have a mandate that every one of their brands has a presence on Facebook, this year. And real presence, not like, oh yeah, there's like a fan page and nobody's there, but that there's real activity and that they're really tracking what people are thinking and saying, people who are friending, you know, whatever the hand towel is or whatever.
I'm friending Crest toothpaste.
Exactly.
Crest toothpaste is my friend.
I love Crest. It's so friendly. But they're spent, they didn't tell me the number, but they are spending tens of millions of dollars on Facebook. It would not surprise me one iota if they would approach something like $100 million in spend on Facebook.
I wonder how much of that Facebook is getting.
What do you mean? It's all Facebook. No, I mean in advertising.
Oh, in
advertising.
In
relationships and advertising.
I was thinking you were saying in terms of constructing their whole program.
Oh, I'm sure they're spending well more than that on building. Because each brand is supposed to come up with its own strategy to create a presence. And basically what the P&G folks said was, Facebook went from 0 to 350 million people in 5 years. It's going from 350 million people today to 5 billion people over the coming years. It is they believe it will be the platform for communication.
Maybe it will be the internet.
Yeah, totally.
Maybe all this other stuff that we have no control over, which has viruses and bugs and unreliable delivery and all that stuff, maybe Facebook just takes that all over and we don't ever go to the internet anymore. We don't use the internet, we just use Facebook. We privatize the internet into Facebook.
Yeah, I don't see it. Maybe. I'm sorry. That's possible, Howard. Which means we should be investing in things building on top of the Facebook platform. What we should have done is vested in Facebook. But given that we're too late for that, we should be investing in things that
build
on top of
it. Good investment. They go public.
Good. I'm in. I'm going to bet my 401k. But this is interesting. So you say, well, maybe people will shift everything, all communications to Facebook. But I was at this startup-to-startup dinner last night, and then we get to the table conversation, and so the question that was asked was, if someone wants to get to you to catch your attention, what is the communications channel that is most likely to capture your attention? Is it set your cell phone or SMS or email or Twitter or Facebook or whatever? So what do you think was the predominant answer? And these were young people. I was easily the oldest one at the table.
Facebook.
Email to a person. Everyone said, send me an email. Isn't that interesting?
I would think it wouldn't be email because there's so much issues with delivering and spam filters and all that type of stuff. You never really know if it's been delivered.
Well, see, and that was, again, this is Return Path. This was the conversation. Yeah. This is why we're having this conversation at the table. But basically, everybody took the view that, you know, if you really wanted to catch their attention and that they could have that information and that they would deal with it, they would have it at their fingertips until they dealt with it, that email was the answer. And that's clearly my answer. Hmm. And in fact, if you send me a Facebook message or you send me a direct message or you send me a message in LinkedIn, it all comes to my email, right?
So I noticed, you know, 6 or 8 months ago, I started to get every day a few emails from Facebook with a message that somebody sent to me, and it's completely stopped.
That's because you must not respond to them in the Facebook context of Facebook or something.
I usually do. It's usually somebody who hasn't been in contact with me for a while, or
yeah,
they're not trusting email, or they tried. It just seemed like a phase for me for a while.
You would be amazed what proportion of my wife's email traffic is coming from Facebook. Easily more than half of the messages that she receives in her email are Facebook messages, notifications, etc. It's unbelievable. Like, what is the point? Forget email. Just go to Facebook. So maybe
I was at Facebook today. I had to pick up Baba Maraca and went.
Oh, you were actually there.
I went to pick him up, and I was. They have this new big campus. I guess what was it, HP before?
Yeah, I think that's right up on the
hill. And it's up on this hill on California, and right at the corner there's like, it's in a residential neighborhood. And like, there's literally from the entrance to their driveway, there's 15 feet away the houses start. And there is just traffic and cars and waiting on the road. And I got to imagine the people living in those houses are bummed.
They're miserable. They're very angry and miserable. It's the neighborhood next to my neighborhood that building is in. They got so fed up with what was going on, in particular with parking, that it took them 7 years to get permit parking in that neighborhood, so that we can't show up to go to a meeting at Facebook and park in the neighborhood. There are limits, and you need a pass and all this stuff.
I think what those house owners should do is wait till the day Facebook goes public and just put their houses up for sale. There'll be some geek in Facebook who's like,
I
want to go across the street and take a nap in the middle of the day.
Right.
I'll pay $2 million for that house. I know it's only worth 1.8, but I'll pay an extra $200K.
Then they can move to another neighborhood.
Or Facebook will get bigger and they'll move.
Well, they are actually. That's they're already outgrowing, you know, this pretty big space. So it will be very interesting to see. But they're shuttling people in, and what I've noticed is there was this theory that it was going to be really good for California Ave, which there are lots of restaurants and stuff on that, because there's going to be so many more people. Nobody leaves Facebook. It's just like when Google had its own cafeteria, Yahoo had its own cafeteria. Everybody goes up there. They feed you. There's soda. There's snacks. Nobody leaves. They drive there, and then they drive home.
And it's just a little bit far to walk down to California Avenue.
Too far.
Definitely. A little bit, yeah. Right? It's 15 minutes instead of 5 minutes.
Right.
So
lazy Americans, no one's walking that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
So I'm friends with some guys who work down at Honda Strategic Ventures.
You think you're friends with
them. Well, I think I'm friends.
You're friendly.
they let me buy them lunch every now and then.
All right, yeah. Okay, that's friends. For Howard, that's friends.
And they always have some interesting technologies and stuff. It's always something that's going to end up on the automobile. And that's what they're looking for. They're looking for really cool technologies that will eventually make their cars better. And we discussed how, you know, I asked them, from the time you guys invest to the time it ends up on the car, and they're like, yeah, it's usually like, I don't know, 7 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or something. It gets to be a really long time.
Yeah.
I'm like, how long have you been investing? And they're like, 7 years.
Our first product made.
But so that's a strategic initiative, right? They're not looking purely for financial gain. They're looking for stuff that will improve their products. And I regularly get, I'm kind of a car lover, I get pitches from guys who have really neat technologies. And I got one earlier this week, which made me think about it, which was you basically replace your rear view mirror with this special rear view mirror, and you program it once, and it helps you park your car parallel. And it is pretty cool. So they have a demo video on YouTube, and you can pull up on the street, and it tells you when to stop. It says, put it in reverse, turn your back up, stop, turn the wheel all the way
to
the right.
That would be really helpful.
Back up, stop, turn your wheel all the way to the left. It tells you if the space is big enough, and it does it perfectly every time. And I said to the guy, this is fantastic. I mean, there are devices like this around the world, but this is literally a $250 device that works, and it's all in the rearview mirror, so it doesn't mess with anything in your car. So I introduced it to the guys at Honda. Maybe they want to take a look at it.
Yeah.
But we have this problem sometimes with really cool stuff that we just can't invest because by the time it ends up on a car and it's gone through safety testing and it's gone through production evaluation and it's gone through design into the vehicle, it's 4, 5, 7 years.
Well, this is, I mean, you know, I'm amazed at these biotech and medical investors because that's their path. Their path is very different from ours, right? That it takes that long. And it's true of all, and device manufacturers, right? How long does it, you go to CES and you, we just saw this year in CES a bunch of 3D televisions. But I think 5, 7 years ago, we were seeing those pitches here and we looked at them and they were sort of interesting. But again, man, it's, you know, first of all, there's the technology problem. Then there's the supply chain problem. How do you get them into market and all that stuff? So it's just hard to envision a venture-backed company with that kind of lead time, with that kind of technology risk. Those are tough.
So 5 years ago, I went on a trip to Japan with the Skype guys to look at proposals from some Japanese companies about how to integrate Skype. And one of them was a demo from Panasonic about how Skype would be built into your TV. So when you're watching TV and you got a call, it could turn off the program, turn on the video camera built in the TV and put you in a video call. They just came out with the device. And this is 5 years, a similar kind of thing. It was really cool. And we're like, that's really cool. Can you have it out?
Yeah, do it. When's that
spring? And they're like, well, yeah, but what spring, we don't know.
Well, look at how many Wi-Fi phones, right? There were going to be all these, you know, sort of standalone Wi-Fi phones. And they trickled into the market a couple years ago and then last year. And, you know, now, of course, why would you do that? Because the Wi-Fi phone is software in your phone, right? It's going to run on Android. It's going to run on the iPhone. And, oh, that reminds me. This buddy of mine, a guy named Wade McNary, I think I've talked about it, about him. He's got this device that's going to make the universal remote, make your iPhone into a universal remote. So he came by and he showed me the thing. The hardware is a little IR thing that plugs into your thing. But the thing that was completely awesome was how you program it. You just basically tell it what, you know, oh, okay, I'm now going to program the play button. And then you press a button on your iPhone, and then you press the play button on the remote, and then it learns. And then you say, okay, I'm going to program. Yeah. And
I want it for a garage door opener.
It would work totally. There's no reason it wouldn't work exactly the same way for a garage door
opener.
That's
the way I program my garage door opener. When you put in a new battery, you have to like push a button and then push the button.
Yeah, right.
At the
same silly,
time.
Right? But I bet you I'll hey Wade McNary, I hope you're listening.
Can I get a sample?
Make it work for garage doors. There's no reason. It's still IR, right? Oh no, garage doors aren't IR though. They're something different.
Probably all right. Need a lot of more
create
power
the garage
too.
Door thing. Yeah, yeah, but you just have it sitting in your car and you just plug it into your thing and press the button. That'd be sweet.
I'd pay money for that. I'd pay $4.99 for an application to make my iPhone open my garage door.
You wouldn't pay $100? Because it's got advice. It requires a piece of hardware.
Oh, a hardware piece?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
$50.
You might pay more for the hardware, right?
I might pay $50 for the hardware, $4.99 for the software that makes it work.
Exactly. So now you're up to $55. That'd be cool. So whenever it's out, Wade, then I'll pitch it for real. That was like a half pitch. That was a half pitch, but it was cool.
That was just to get the press excited about it.
Yeah, exactly. Get them all warmed up. Wade McNair. So this is the thing about Wade. Wade and I went to Stanford together, and Wade was the guy in the product. There's a product development group or major at Stanford, and these guys all they're the guys who end up working at IDEO, and they just think differently than the rest of us. Like, you know, we try to solve a problem by being very linear. Oh, how do you solve that problem? Well, of course, you have to pick up the bucket, you fill it with water, whatever. And Wade and his brethren, who became the design gurus, they would say, why do you need a bucket? What if we had a... Do you have a tube? It'd be great. It would be great if we had a long enough tube or whatever. You know, that's how they thought. I always think it's amazing to spend time at IDEO or spend time with the design folks at the D school at Stanford, because they just think about things so differently. It's really valuable to shake your brain. It's sort of why I like the TED conference. The TED conference is coming up in 3 weeks, 4 weeks coming up. And it's the same one. It's kind of like, you know, you see a bunch of different disciplines and you go, oh, that's really interesting. And that forces you to think a little differently. There you have it.
There you have it.
That's all I got.
You had enough today?
I don't know. You know, I mean, oh, yeah, we should talk about that. Let's talk about
David likes art.
I do like art. Although you're just going to give me crap because Howard thinks I love buying stuff. You always give me a hard time. You come in my office and you look at my boxes by my door from Amazon and you say,
I'm just telling you, every single day there's 3 or 4 new cardboard boxes by your door with stuff that you buy. I mean, how big is your house? Did you read that article in the New York Times this morning? Did you read this article about how the was it the Times? How the American dream is all a big farce, and the government and the big companies just want you to have a house that's large so you have a place to put all that crap you buy.
I think that's a perfectly fair assessment.
I'm just wondering, you must either have a large house or you live down the street from Goodwill. And like every 3 months,
just cycles through.
Cycle it through.
But again, you know, this is the problem with having so many children, Howard. It was my son Beckett's birthday this week. He turned 8.
Nice.
So I had to buy him crap. I bought him, you know, all sorts of really awesome things.
He would have rather just gone outside and thrown the old ball around with Dad.
That's why I bought him a ball. That's why he got a football. No, I do. But so anyway, so yeah, we've been looking at art. Like, I'm completely in love with art. Art is awesome. And I noticed that art is increasingly finding its way to the web, right? You can find out all sorts of information about art, but you can also find new art on the web. And we spent some time with Angelo, the founder of DeviantArt. And DeviantArt is a huge site. It's crazy huge. Did you have any sense of how big DeviantArt was?
Not until he told me.
But you said your daughter's aunt looks at DeviantArt?
Yeah.
See, it skews very young, so we are definitely not the model.
So we probably can't give out any of his data.
No, probably not.
No, but it is the amount of new submissions is just incredible on a daily basis that they're getting. And the number of people that are using it, it is basically the place in the world where you go and display artwork or view artwork, and you can have a stream of artwork coming out of there. If you like the Japanese manga Naruto, you can like basically have a feed
subscribe to it.
Naruto-like stuff coming at you, and you can just be like, wow, ooh, look at that one. Ooh, that's cool. And there's so much being submitted. It's just a constant stream of new content that's being put up. That's in line until you get tired of it, and then you subscribe to something else.
Well, no, I went home and I showed my kids, and my oldest went on and looked up some band, and there was a ton of art around that band. I said, "Oh, yeah, you should check out Green Day. I bet there are a million things." And sure enough, Green Day, there were like thousands of paintings and drawings and photographs and all about Green Day.
He called it Pandora for art.
Yeah, which is really cool.
And like, I always think it's neat when people use some other company as the descriptor, like, we're the eBay for this, or we're the Google for that. And every now
when
and then...
When it makes sense.
But Pandora for art actually
no,
works.
No, that's what I'm saying. It looks great in that context. I hate it when it's like, we're the, you know, Google for Pez dispensers, and you go, what the fuck are you talking about? You're nothing like that. This doesn't make any sense.
We have high margins like Google, and we have network effect like eBay, and we
eBay of Google. We're the Google Bay. But no, it was a fun conversation, and what is cool about that site is that Angelo has built it up over the last almost decade, and he said very carefully, very systematically, very meaningfully, to give the best possible experience to the people who are the artists as well as the people who are looking for art. And that's, you know,
and he has scale now, and he is the clear market leader.
Yeah,
that just there is nobody's going to touch that.
But it's sort of interesting to think, so he's got that, and then you look at something like art.com, which is selling, well, they're north of $100 million in revenue selling posters and kind of, you know, those sorts of things.
My wife got me this, and gladly she won't listen to this podcast, but she got me this framed poster for Hanukkah. And I kind of looked at this and go, oh, God, where do I got to put that? And I finally said, I bring it into work. That's what I'll do with that. So I bring it into the office, and I show it to Kirsten, who helps me out. And Kirsten, like, has that. Oh, that's nice.
Oh, that's nice.
And I'm like, oh, shit.
I can't hang that.
So I'm thinking of putting it in my car and then just like taking my car to a bad neighborhood and leaving the keys. And if I say, honey, that picture, it's gone. Somebody stole my car. That might be one way to get rid of it. But the only problem is she'll go back to art.com and buy another one.
Buy it again. So on the other end of the spectrum, so you have DeviantArt, just this vast amount of user-generated and user-created posted art. And then you have this art.com, which is sort of a different beast altogether. And then you have something like 20 by 200. And 20 by 200, if you haven't seen it, is just completely awesome. Now, maybe this is like the premature, shameless sucking up portion of the program, but Jen Beckman, who is the CEO of 20 by 200, is just a great entrepreneur. And she had an art studio in New York, and she was working with small artists, etc. And it struck her that there would be better ways to use the internet to sell real art, not, you know, that art collecting isn't something that should be an elitist experience, but that you could get real art should be made available to larger groups of people, but it's still curated by her. It's, and, you know, in fact, 20 by 200 I think says a Jen Beckman experience or something like that. Like, she, it's important to her. She picks artists who she thinks will appeal to people, will be valuable, and then sells a lot of art on the site, and increasingly large amounts of art. And the art's great. Like, I'm, you know, there's this artist Claire Grill who has a couple of pieces that are up there now that I just love. Like, the stuff is beautiful, and you can spend $50 and get a great piece of original art. Or you can spend $2,000. You know, it depends on how much money you got. You should check it out. 20 by 200.
I've checked it out. I will check it out again. Thank you for reminding me.
20x200. It's good. I like it.
Want to talk more? We can go on forever. I think we've done enough.
Yeah, the pregnant pause. That's. I'm just looking outside to see if the rain has stopped so that you can move on with our lives.
We need more rain.
More rain?
I heard that Tahoe is epic skiing right now.
Epic.
Did you see this picture? I saw it on Arrington. Mike Arrington sent this picture last weekend. He went skiing up in Tahoe with his team.
Was he with his team or was it with Chris Sacca? Sacca lives up there.
I think it was his team. Okay. But it's a picture that he took, obviously, while sitting in the driver's seat of the car, you know, like over the steering wheel, of terrible conditions on the road, snow and sleet and such. And he's typed a title in it, which is Tahoe Drive, and then emailed it to posters. No texting, taking pictures, and emailing while driving. Anyway.
Exactly. So, Chris Sacca, all right, I'm not really done. I have one other thing. I love Chris Sacca. Sacca's, you know, he was an early Google guy, and he did a bunch of their early deals and telecom stuff, and now he's an angel investor. And what I love is that he really believes in the stuff that he invests in, but that he's completely shameless about them. So he had a tweet today. I don't know if he's on the board or if he's an advisor to Twitter, but he's been very involved in Twitter, and he's an investor in Gowalla. And so his tweet this morning was like, amazed by the incredible speed at which Gowalla's growing. It's growing like crazy by, you know.
So you better hurry up and get on.
And it said, are you on Gowalla? Question mark. Like, are you a loser or are you on Gowalla? And I just thought that was so great. Like, you know, Sacca's out throwing it out there.
He's got like hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Twitter followers too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Because he was one of, I think he must have been on the recommended list. They just updated the recommended list. That's actually big news.
I'm sure I'm not on there.
No, you're not, Howard. Yeah. Have you ever tweeted anything?
Shameless tweets. You don't.
Yeah. All right. Those are fine. Good. Anyway. Yes. No. Yeah. So they redid the recommended list. Which,
yeah, it was interesting. You know, Gowalla and Foursquare and this fierce competition, and then Yelp jumps in.
Yeah, dun, dun, dun.
You know, so that's always one of the fears of venture investors. It's, what you're doing is so cool, but what if Google does it? What if Facebook does it? What if somebody else does it? And in this case, Yelp did it. And, you know, yeah, it remains to be seen what happens from it, but it's quite possible Yelp just, you know, did 100 times the volume of Gowalla and Foursquare combined. We don't know the numbers.
Yeah, it's no, it'll be interesting to watch, right? I mean, Yelp certainly has a way larger install base on the iPhone, and what they did was added check-ins on their Yelp iPhone app. So it'll be very interesting to see. I mean, you know, who's going to win this geo war?
Well, I think Foursquare and Gowalla, they're just going to add, like, restaurant recommendations then.
So there, take that. Now we're even. All right. Well, Howard, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate it. As always,
thanks.
I am David Hornick from August Capital.
And this is Howard Hartenbaum from August Capital saying thank you to David Hornick from August Capital.
On the August Capital Show.
The David Hornick Show.
From August Capital.